He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
All right, bleep, bleep, bleep. That Tuesday's bar at the Resorts World Casino at Aqueduct Racetrack. Lots of people banged up. Have they only charged two people, though, with criminal offenses? You had a hurt cop out of control Friday night. I tell you, and that goes on and on. How long does that last?
Oh, a couple minutes, yeah.
It goes on and on.
Yeah.
So where were the security guards? Where were the cops? How did this thing happen?
Well, some of what you hear screaming in the background is security guards running in, trying to break it up. Police tried to come in to break it up. It was two women. It started with two women fighting in line outside this daiquiri bar that was having its grand opening. The line, like, snaked through the food court and out the front entrance of the Rancino there in Queens. And
Rancino, is that what they call it?
Yeah, like Racetrack Casino. Uh-huh. Rancino. It's one of the most successful ones in the country.
This well, good for that.
Yeah. So it's been open, almost 3 years now, maybe a little more than 3 years. And these two women went at it, and that was it. Everybody jumped in to try to break it up, and it turned into this huge melee.
So how does it become that big a deal? How does it become a mob scene? How does it become a riot?
Well, there's a couple thoughts. They're not exactly sure. They're not telling us for sure. But these women could have been gang members. The people around them could have been gang members. Uh-huh. And maybe this turned into more of a gang fight than just a melee.
And they must search everyone before they get in. Like, you see Major League Baseball starts today. The Yankees play today. They play Toronto at the stadium. They have new metal detectors. What are the pain in the butt that's going to be?
Yeah, it's like walking through an airport.
I like walking through an airport. Just what I need. That's why I hate to travel. I have this knee replacement. It always titanium. So it always sets the damn machine off unless they have the scanner. I'd rather they were looking at my junk, in one of those electronic scanners than beeping me in the metal detector. Now it's going to take me a half hour to get to the damn Yankee game. Pain in the butt. I got a lot of things on my mind today on this Monday. A lot of things. I barely know where to begin, but I want to start with the nightmare I had last night. The nightmare was because at this late stage in my life, I can't afford to be a legal resident of both New Jersey and New York. So I've decided, because Sol is in school, she's just finishing third grade here in Manhattan, that I'm going to move everything to this side of the river because I just can't afford, to be a resident. It costs so much money. I mean, they soak you, both New Jersey and New York. Yeah. They both insist that you're a resident. So they soak you. But I did some checking. I did some checking about why people are choosing to leave New Jersey. New Jersey has the greatest percentage of outbound moves of any state nationally. All right, so we knew that news from a couple of months ago. 65%. Two people are leaving New Jersey for every one person going to New Jersey. So for me, selling real estate, I just say, oh, my God. Now, why? You have to ask yourself why. Here you had Chris Christie, who took over with such great promise that he was going to relieve, for example, the tax burden. That was him just there. He's going to relieve the tax burden on the Garden State. So I'm checking around. So aside from the fact that New Jersey leads the nation in terms of people moving out, New York, by the way, is second. Illinois is third. This is according to the United Van Lines. The personal finance website Wallet Hub today releases a report on the highest and lowest property taxes in the nation in 2015. Guess who has the highest real estate tax in the entire nation? New Jersey. New Jersey is the highest. New Jersey real estate taxes are 8 times higher than Hawaii.
Wow.
8 times higher. So where does that money go? Where does all that money go? I mean, it is just amazing how there is this total disconnect between what politicians say and what they actually end up doing. New Jersey, the highest real estate tax in the nation today. And the other thing I was thinking about today, I woke up in New York and I left my house at like 7:10. I left the apartment and I was at Lenny's on 33rd and 7th getting coffee and peanut butter and jelly on a bagel in about, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes. It was great. At that hour, you could zoom down Fifth Avenue. It really went fast. Guess what the average American commute is? 25 minutes.
Wow.
25 minutes. Now, compare that to what anybody who schleps in from New Jersey. Now, you come at 3 in the morning.
It's different.
It's different. You know, when I came for Fox and Friends on Friday morning at 5, 5:30, it's different. But when you have to work an 8 to 4 or 5 or a 9 to 5 job and you're trying to slug your way through, people that work in New York City average 48 minutes a day getting to work. So it's almost twice the average American commute to get to New York to work. And so a couple of things happen as a result. Commuters, particularly these long commutes, the New York City style commute, they are 5.5 to 6.5 pounds heavier than people who don't have that commute.
Oh, makes sense.
And because you're sitting, all you do is you sit there, you eat your breakfast, then you have like, it's like Lord of the Rings, you have second breakfast when you get to work. So, and you also, a third of the people who have commutes of that kind of duration have back and neck pain. So no wonder everybody's grumpy. No wonder they go to the Rancino and they have fights over free daiquiris. You know, it is just, I mean, it shouldn't be harder to live here. It should be easier to live here. I mean, I remember when Howard Stern was running for governor, or then he was running for mayor. I forget what
governor,
it was.
Yeah.
But but his one thing that I loved was his whole policy was going to be no trucks delivering in New York during business hours. You know, because the trucks screw up everything. They screw up all your traffic and has all of these other effects. You'd screw up traffic, makes a longer commute, which affects how many people want to live out in the suburbs, which affects real estate, gives you neck pain, gives you weight gain. Traffic is the heart of everything. You've got to start there. Now, this is just me personally ranting. This isn't what I wanted my lead to be as we start this week. But these are things to ponder, aren't they? When the next time you have someone running for office and they pretend to be a populist, just bust them on the real nuts and bolts stuff, the stuff that really affects your quality of life. And my goodness, your real estate taxes and the resale value of your homes. I mean, these things are so relevant and so real, rather than some of these other fake issues that mean so little to us. One thing that means a lot to me is journalistic integrity. And today you have newspapers and news programs all leading with this Rolling Stone magazines. It's the magazine's humiliation on this false University of Virginia gang rape story. And the various commentators and the pundits today, they're talking about how Rolling Stone chose not to do basic journalistic footwork, like asking the accused whether or not this really happened, trying to get corroborating evidence, trying to get witnesses, trying to get anything that would buttress the story of the accuser in the University of Virginia fraternity story. But the point that everybody is missing here is this was not just a journalistic failure. This is just like the Ferguson, Missouri hands up, don't shoot fraud. The biggest part of the problem is that the editors, the reporters, and the repeaters, they want the shocking story to be true. They want the spoiled, entitled white frat boys to be committing these crude, criminal, savage things without fear of reprimand or punishment. That's what the critics want. They want that to be true. Just like Ferguson, Missouri, hands up, don't shoot. Never happened. Remember the Duke University lacrosse team and their gang rape? That never happened either. These fake stories, and this is my main point about these fake stories. They have the same basic core falsity as the Benghazi murders. Another persistent fraud in Benghazi that the U.S. could have saved our people there in Libya, but we chose. Obama chose to do nothing. Obama chose to do nothing. That's the legend. That's the essential fraud. Obama chose to do nothing in Benghazi. The Duke University lacrosse team, all those white entitled kids, they raped because they thought they could do it with impunity. That University of Virginia fraternity, they gang raped that woman because they thought they could be, because they are so entitled that they are rich and they're spoiled that they could do savage things without fear of reprimand or punishment. We want these stories to be true because it suits our political, our ideological objectives. We'd rather flog a dead story in Benghazi than let our fallen heroes rest in peace. Duke, University of Virginia, Ferguson, Missouri, Benghazi. They're part of the same phenomena. Promoters posing as journalists.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-Geraldo, 77 WABC.
25 minutes after 10 o'clock on this April the 6th. Monday, April the 6th. Is that right?
You got it right, yeah. All day.
I got my boat home yesterday from Seabright. It was a blustery passage, but I always try to extend the season. We have a six-month boating season. I try to make it seven, so I'm always the first one on the river and the last one off the river. But last night was kind of, yesterday was kind of blustery. But it was fun and empty, and gray and windy and choppy and fabulous. I loved it. So what I'm talking about today is promoters posing as journalists. They have the Duke lacrosse, their gang rape, the University of Virginia fraternity, their gang rape, both fake stories. Ferguson, hands up, don't shoot, became a national movement all based on a fraud. I remember, you know, LeBron James and all the players coming out, you know, their hands up, don't shoot. You had the anchorman, hands up, don't shoot. Really slandering law enforcement, not just in Ferguson, Missouri, but nationwide. You had it here in the streets of New York. Hands up, don't shoot. It was a fake story. It never happened. Benghazi, you know, I can't tell you how many reports there were of how President Obama fiddled when Benghazi burned. It's the same thing. It's promoters posing as journalists. So as long as I'm on this rant about promoters and posing as reporters, as journalists, another urban legend has always been that Jews buy loyalty to Israel with their donations. That high roller people of the Jewish faith in the United States buy loyalty to Israel with donations. So guess what? The New York Times investigates what went into, you know, the Senator Tom Cotton, the Arkansas freshman, the war hero, the author of the letter to Iran signed by the 47 Republican senators. So the Times does an investigation. So is it true or false that the GOP position, this very intense and unquestioning support of Israel, is in part because of substantial financial contributions from a very small number of very wealthy business leaders, the most notorious, of course, the casino magnate, Sheldon Adelson. So, Noam, is it true or false that there is a direct link, apparent link, between contributions from the likes of Sheldon Adelson and unquestioned support by certain GOP senators, the vast majority of them, of Israel?
Wait, so you're asking me if lawmakers can be bought off with cash?
Well, that's a theoretical right. question, and of course the answer to that is
but
yes.
But is a small group of Jews influencing the Republican Party? Yeah, sure, why not?
It is true. It is true. The Times shows, well, whether or not they are influenced, the Times shows with a, I think, very prudent reporting that Senator Tom Cotton, the freshman from Arkansas, received substantial contributions from Sheldon Adelson. Are you surprised by that?
Not at all.
I mean, are you depressed by that?
I'm depressed by it, but that goes on, doesn't matter what the issue is. If it was a battle over guns, the NRA would be funneling the same amount of cash his direction as well.
But isn't that sad that that's what politics has become now? It's pay for play.
Yeah.
Which is what Menendez is in such trouble for.
Yeah.
But in Tom Cotton's case, it also appears that the senator reached out to Bill Kristol, the very eminent, we've had him on the program a bunch of times, editor of the Standard, the Weekly Standard, the voice of the conservative party or the conservative faction of the Republican Party, to help draft that letter. And Bill Kristol's Emergency Committee for Israel also provided financial support to Senator Tom Cotton, who was only a one-term congressman when he ran against Mark Pryor and defeated the Democrat in Arkansas. So this is where we're going now. This is what it's going to be about now. And I have to tell you, it was to see Bibi Netanyahu, and you know, I work out as I watch the Sunday morning talk shows before the vote, and you see Senator Netanyahu, I'm going to say could might as well be Senator or Vice President or maybe President Netanyahu, on every one of the talk shows, talking about how the Iran deal is a bad deal. It was just, I mean, Senator Feinstein, who of course is Jewish, the most prominent Jewish senator, says she's tired of Bibi and his broken record and, you know, and his, you know, his constant preaching about how this Iran treaty would endanger the survival of Israel. It's so true. It's so true. All right. I've got a million things to talk about. I want to hear from you. So be patient. I'm coming your way.
On the air, online, and on iHeart.com. We are 77 WABC.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
Well, I'm sure they think it's a good deal, but we differ. I think this is a bad deal. It leaves Iran with a vast nuclear infrastructure. It lifts the sanctions on them fairly quickly and enables them to get billions of dollars into their coffers. They're not going to use it for schools or hospital or roads, Martha. They're going to use it to pump up their terror machine worldwide and their military machine that is busy conquering the Middle East now. Third, it's a temporary deal. That is, whatever restrictions are placed on Iran's nuclear program, they're removed after a few years, and Iran will be free to have a vast arsenal with which to ultimately produce many nuclear bombs.
All right, Senator Feinstein calling Bibi Netanyahu a broken record. You know, talking about why would President Obama sign a treaty that endangered the survival of Israel and by extension the survival of the free world? I mean, because a nuclear weapon can't be used, you know, Israel's the size of Connecticut. You think if they dropped a nuke on Connecticut, it wouldn't affect New York and New Hampshire and Vermont and Massachusetts and Rhode Island. I mean, it's ridiculous. It really is to make it all about Israel. It's not about Israel. It's about the world. It's about the survival of the planet. And just really irks me how I really believe that when you run for office, when you run for the Senate or the Congress, you have ideas. Like these 47 Republican senators that signed that letter to Iran, do you really think that all 47 of them think in lockstep? Or were they driven by Senator Cotton and this very provocative letter written essentially, it sounds like, by Bill Kristol and the hard right wing of the pro-Israeli lobby? I mean, I don't believe that they all think this. I think that this is all pragmatic decision making, dependent on political contributions and your ideological standing. And it's just like I know mentioned the NRA. It's the same reason people don't, you know, in the death, we didn't even note it last week, of Sarah Brady, Tom Brady's, you know, his widow, James Brady's widow, Sarah, who fought against the NRA. You know, it's something that really is very irksome to me. And David, you're the first caller of the week. And ladies and gentlemen, I get to everybody. It's all about you now. 38 minutes after 10 o'clock. David, you're first in Brooklyn. What's up?
Yes, about your, the New York Times story of how Jewish money influences support for Israel. Well, people have to realize in America, there are about 200 billionaires. And I did some research. You can do an internet search. 48% of all of America.
Oh, wait, is this going to be like an anti-Semitic rant? I don't want to hear. I'm sorry. I can't listen to how disproportionately wealthy a certain group is. I just don't have the heart for it today. Tony in New Jersey. What's up, Tony?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call, Rob.
Well, thank you for calling.
I just got a question about you saying about the Ferguson hands up, don't shoot thing was just a whole farce.
It was a farce. It was a fake.
Yeah, okay. So, but I just got a question about the situation. I was listening to Curtis and Kuby last week when they were talking about the bird dog situation. And with the bird dog situation, Curtis was saying, who would you better believe, because he was trying to criticize the president for making the statement. So Curtis was saying last week, who should you believe, the president, or actually believe the people who were physically there? So I want to try to find out if you can believe the people that was physically there with the bird dog situation, why shouldn't that be the same thing with the Ferguson situation? Because the people that were physically there for the Ferguson.
But that's not true, Tony. That's not true. I know you're talking about Sergeant Bergdahl and his platoon mates all think that he's a deserter, or majority of them do. And the Army said he wasn't deserting per se. He left his post because he wanted to report wrongdoing to some other military unit. So he's not a classic deserter in that sense. So we believe the Pentagon investigators. Why would they lie? I don't think they have I can't come to the place where I believe that someone can lie to protect someone else's political behind. It's too risky. So in the Bergdahl situation, I personally think, he's better off in the United States than he is in a Taliban or Al-Qaeda or ISIS prison camp. So better here than there, even though I think he is probably a deserter, or at least someone who left his post and should be disciplined, maybe even sent to prison behind it. I don't think the issue with Ferguson, though, is it just didn't happen. People just made it up. The people who testified that Michael Brown had his hands up were shown to be not truthful. You know, they were there, but they had an agenda. And the Justice Department, who went looking for problems in Ferguson, found that those witnesses lied. Ferguson was a hoax. Ferguson was a hoax. It was a tragic incident involving an officer who felt his life imperiled. He resorted to deadly force. And the Justice Department found that most cops in that same situation, that it was reasonable to use deadly force with a kid reaching in to the window and all the rest of it. Ferguson didn't happen the way the protesters in this and other cities said it happened. It never did. Just like the University of Virginia rape story, it never happened. Apparently never happened, although the investigation is still open. It was a journalistic failure on every level. Here's Vince in New Jersey. What are you thinking about, Vince? Thanks for calling.
Real quick on that last caller, they did believe and listen to the people that were there in Ferguson. That's how they came to the conclusion that it was a big lie about the hands up, and that's how they found the officer was not guilty, because they listened to the eyewitnesses that were there.
The credible eyewitnesses rather than the people who were cohorts with Brown in the stick-up of the convenience store earlier. Go ahead, Vince.
Exactly, and I agree with everything you're saying. And I got to tell you, ever since the Netanyahu speech, I kind of stopped listening to you, because I feel like you're becoming part of the Obama apology team. Everything that's happened, like today, for example, when you talked about, you know, what happened in the Rolling Stone article and Ferguson, all of a sudden you inject Benghazi, as if to say Benghazi is not a real story. And you said, let these people, these heroes, rest in peace. Well, no. Those people died. And forget about what led up to that. We know that everything after that was a lie.
That's not the way the story was told or is being told. It's not about the spin. If it was, it's a totally legitimate story. The spin is a legitimate story. But, Vince, do you deny that the legend of Obama not helping people that could have been helped has been persistent?
Well, I'm not talking about that. I said, let's not lead up to that. Let's talk about
You're not talking about it because it doesn't fit your thesis.
Let's talk about they blamed an Israeli Jew that said that caused all this stuff. Oh, it was just a matter of
What Israeli Jew are you talking about?
The state. We had the president apologizing for a video that had nothing to do with that. We had
you don't know the video had nothing to do with
we
it. The point is that those guys could not have been saved,
Bro,
that to use their deaths the way it's been used is just pure politics, man. It's just pure politics. Now you shrink the story to a spinning story.
No,
the spinning story is the story that should have been told from the very beginning.
I got to let you go. You're a smart man, but I just don't have time to debate you. But I appreciate the call, Vince. Good call. Dave in New Jersey. What's up, Dave? What are you thinking about? Yo, Dave. All right, you snooze, you lose. Dan. Hey, Dan.
Yeah, hey, Geraldo. How are you?
Good, man. What's up?
I'm calling because I do believe Netanyahu is right. And how can you have a story?
Why is Netanyahu right and Obama and the other leaders of the six countries wrong?
Well, how about just on the framework of the agreement and the explanation of it, and Obama telling us that this is a step forward, and the Iranians telling their people the exact opposite?
They're well, let me ask you, Dan, let me ask you what Senator Feinstein asks of Bibi Netanyahu. What is your alternative to the president, to the coalition's plan vis-a-vis Iran and the nuclear weapons? What's your plan, Dan?
My plan is to keep the sanctions, increase the sanctions, and bring them to their knees.
And you think realistically that is going to add to stability, that Iran will, after years since 1979, suddenly roll over and say, okay, now we really give up?
Let me ask you a question, Geraldo. We've been to
You're not answering my question, but go ahead. You can ask me.
Well, because my question is, we've been to the negotiating table with Iran many times. We've tried to have resolutions with them that have been broken because Iran has cheated numerous times over the years. So my question to you is, how do you play cards? How would you play poker with somebody that has cheated you three or four different times? You don't play.
No, but the thing is, the expression is, listen to me. Okay, listen. The whole thing, if the administration is not lying and all five other countries are not lying, there is something called snap back. In other words, sanctions snap back if there is no verifiable inspections of Iran's nuclear facilities. They snap back. In other words, they suspend them now, so they make a few dollars now. If they cheat, the sanctions snap back. So do you think that they would go through this entire exercise to have the relief of the sanctions for what, a couple of months? Get a couple of $1 billion here or there? You think that's really in the fate of this nation is going to make a long-term difference in terms of the quality of life of the Iranian people, their ability to travel freely, to be educated abroad, to be able to do business, to be able to have a MasterCard or an American Express card that they can swipe at a store in Iran, which they cannot do now? They would do that just to gain 3 months' advantage? I don't think so. I think you got to. I think that what we will see, let me just say this right now. I think the Senate is in no mood to confirm this. I think the Congress of the United States is being lobbied so heavily, going back to that conversation we had earlier about how or why or by whom. I think the lobbying will make it very difficult for the legislative branch of government to agree with the executive branch of government on what is best to do with Iran. The net result will be whether or not the president has the chutzpah, if I may, to go forward with this without the permission or consent, advice and consent of the Congress. You know, where will that leave us as a nation? Where will it leave the president of the United States in terms of his, his reputation affects the reputation of the United States worldwide? I mean, all the other nations will say, we go along with this. The other five nations, China, Russia, France, England, and I guess the United Nations is the other part of it. Germany is the other one. I just think that, the Bibi Netanyahu has been heard, and now it's up to the United States to decide what is best for the United States.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues, Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
All right, welcome back. 5 minutes to 11 o'clock here on 77 WABC. Bobby in Bay Ridge, thanks for calling 866-ERALDO. What's up?
You know, always talk about a deal with Iran. It's a joke because if you really read it instead of just reading the headlines, you find out there is no deal. There are only parameters for the deal. That's why they're still negotiating. If there was a deal, the negotiations would be over and things would be signed. But it's parameters. That's why they need another couple months.
So you think of Iran as the biggest enemy? Do you think of Iran as the biggest enemy facing America today?
Well, the biggest thing facing America, as far as that goes, is the economy and immigration and other things. It's not Iran. That's the big problem over there.
So the economy. What about the economy?
Okay, dude.
What about the economy that bothers you?
You're changing the subject.
I don't understand you. What's your point?
It's all fluid. Okay.
Of course, it's fluid. They're in the middle of negotiations.
So all this stuff that everybody's talking about. Oh, about 15 years here, 10 years here, a year here. That's all yet to be negotiated. This is all that's going to be set down and talked about.
Well, of course, it's going to be negotiated. But if people talk about the economy, the Dow up, the Dow futures were down 150. It's up. The market is up over 90. I can't understand it, but no one can doubt that the economy is getting better. And it's certainly better than it should be. And to not give Obama some credit for that, I don't know. It just shows, people just feel what they feel.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
I feel like the sky is falling down. Ain't nobody here to play around. Push it to the edge, I won't back down. Cause it's time to go hard or go home. One way up, no way out. I give it all for the family. We stay up, no bailouts. Give it all for the family.
Go hard or go home. That was my internal theme during Celebrity Apprentice.
Uh-huh.
Go all out or go home. Worked pretty well. I wonder whether the Yankees will go hard or go home. Listen to George A. King III, the sports writer, one of them for the New York Post. Monday at Yankee Stadium against the Blue Jays, the Yankees start a season that has a lot bigger chance to be a nightmare than a dream. That dream is alive because it's opening day, but that dream was alive the last two opening days, and the stadium was dark in October. Also pointing out that Alex Rodriguez will be taking the field. Well, I guess he won't be taking the field. He'll be designated hitter, batting seventh in the Yankee lineup. First time he's been on the grass since September 2013. So before I get to sports, though, Fast and Furious, that was the Wiz Khalifa. That was the music from Fast and Furious, their theme. How did that movie do?
Oh, huge. This franchise has made more than $1 billion. So this is film number 7. And, of course, it took in $143 million this weekend. The star of that movie, of course, killed, right? I mean, he was killed before they finished.
Paul Walker.
Yeah, yep. Paul Walker, before they finished shooting this thing. And they had to bring in his brothers, who looked like him, as stand-ins to shoot some of the scenes, but just a huge weekend. They were thinking 100, 115, 120 million, 143. And my guess is, Monday numbers are not the full numbers. So we might get the numbers later in the day. I bet they'll be even higher than
that. So this is like the biggest April opening ever?
Yeah, I think it is. If I'm not mistaken, it is the biggest.
Do you see the Fast and Furious? Well, you have sons.
Yeah, I mean, they're a little young for it, but I've seen a few of them. They're great movies. I can see why people watch them. They move fast. They're short. You don't need much of an attention span to know what's going on. They're fun. They're great movies.
Guns Gunzelman is going to do our reporting on sports for us. We have so much to talk about. The A-Rod report. I want that, Guns. But you are in Indianapolis, the scene of tonight's national championship basketball game. What's going on there?
I have been living it up here. Oh, of course. Come on now. Indianapolis is actually fun. I mean, we had great concerts from like Imagine Dragons to Rihanna play to Zac Brown Band. So pretty much this whole downtown area, you don't need a car. You don't need an Uber. You can walk everywhere. Within just a couple blocks, you have where the Indiana Pacers play. You got the Colt Stadium and plenty of bars, plenty of restaurants. I've befriended, and I'm sure you'll approve of this, or at least for my sake you will, the Hooters girls. They love me.
Why are you using
my name in that context.
Because you should be proud of me. I got friends. I made friends with the Hooters girls.
I was going to ask you who you were hanging with, but why not the Hooters girls?
I high-fived Shaq, so now Shaq and I are, you know, pretty much best friends. Yeah, pretty much. But this has been an unbelievable, not only tournament Final Four weekend, but just an experience in general. Been here on Radio Row, Westwood One Radio Row, interviewing everybody. Jim Nance from, Jim Nance is the broadcaster to, former players, head coaches, celebrities, just the whole entire deal. And I've been having fun, man. You know, I've been my credential hasn't been revoked just yet.
Well, that's good. What about the politics of it all?
The whole politics, but obviously the Freedom of Religious Act that's been going on with Indiana. There was a big protest, a couple hundred people on Saturday before the game. There were two games on Saturday, Duke, Michigan State. Duke won that one. And then followed by Wisconsin, Kentucky. Wisconsin upset in undefeated Kentucky. But there was a couple hundred people that were protesting. And also all across downtown Indianapolis, they've been giving out T-shirts that say Indianapolis welcomes all. And, there's signs and shirts and everything. And I actually spoke with just not too long ago with the lieutenant governor from Indiana. Her name's Sue Elsperman. And we have a cut of that here, actually.
Let's listen. Because the bill itself was not intended to do any of what people were afraid it would do. So it just happened. We fixed it. We said we would. We listened to what people were saying. And we fixed it quickly. And now we're moving on. And we're just pleased that now we've got the opportunity to continue to speak to what Indiana really is about.
So it's kind of interesting there because I also spoke to the Indianapolis mayor and he was completely against this, saying, you know, that we shouldn't have done it at all. She took the standpoint in that cut where she's like, all that backlash about the bill wasn't even what the bill said.
Baloney. Baloney. Yeah. The mayor's right. They meant exactly what they got busted for, and then they found out they couldn't withstand the heat once they got in the kitchen. That's what happened there.
And you talk about idiots. Who does it right before their biggest event
of the year? That's why they couldn't stand, because the legislature and the governor are powerless in the face of the NCAA and NASCAR and all the
Indianapolis 500.
All right, let's get to basketball, Guns. Who do you got? I have other sidebars, but who do you have? Wisconsin, Duke, who do you have?
In the ABC pool, that of course is for no money involved whatsoever, but maybe I can afford dinner if I do win this thing. I do have Wisconsin winning the whole thing. I chose it before it started. So Wisconsin tonight with the win, it's going to be a great game no matter what. Duke won in 1991 here in Indianapolis. They won the championship. In 2010, they won in Indianapolis. They won the championship. So they're going for their third three-peat here in Indianapolis. But you have Wisconsin, who hasn't won since 1941. Wisconsin spreads the floor out. All five players can shoot the ball, and Duke can drive to the hole. So you'll get two different types of basketball styles going at each other. And also, the final thing to say about it is the fact that Duke and Wisconsin, everyone's like, oh, well, they played earlier this year. They did, but that was December 3rd. And one of the stars for Duke at the time scored 14 points. He got kicked off the team. So he's not even there anymore. And Duke shot 71% in the second half, meaning which doesn't happen. Like, that doesn't happen.
But Wisconsin has to be the long shot.
Yeah. Duke's only a one-point favorite.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Yeah. Duke's only a one-point favorite.
So off basketball again. Now, when Kentucky lost to Wisconsin, one of the things a lot of the Kentucky players who lost their perfect season refused to shake hands with the Wisconsin players, specifically the Harrison twins and Willie Cauley-Stein. Anyway, the Harrison twins, one of them talking about Kaminsky, you know, the white guy senator for Wisconsin said, F that N. When talking about Kaminsky. Now, any vibes from that?
Well, I was at that press conference when it happened, and we all kind of looked at each other like, did he just say that? And
so you heard?
Absolutely. And then it went all over Twitter immediately and went viral. Kaminsky said yesterday, I spoke to him in the locker room before the final team practice that they had. He said that he spoke with Harrison, that he doesn't think much of it, that they shook hands, that it's all good. But still, I mean, it just shows the immaturity factor. And this guy's supposed to be going to the NBA, Harrison is, or, you know, might be eventually soon. You can't be saying something like that. And just sore losers. And Calipari, where are you? Like, where you're supposed to be this great coach. You are. You got it. Your team reflects you as a coach.
Did he not say anything about it? Calipari, who's now in the Hall of Fame, who was coach of the year.
I have not heard him say anything about it. I'm sure he might have just said, oh, that's not us. But he didn't say anything about it at that actual press conference. I don't think he knew that what had just happened.
Okay, now before I let you go, before I get back to your calls, folks, and I appreciate your patience, I am coming back to 866 Geraldo. Go back to baseball for me. A-Rod.
Do I want to? I'm a Yankee fan.
Just give me a minute. I mean, what are you saying? Is it going to be a nightmare or a dream for the Yankees?
I'm a Yankee fan, and I'm dreading the season. This is the first time Sabathia isn't the starter for opening day since 2009. He came back into pitching 30 pounds heavier now, so he's fat as heck. You have Tanaka, who's just coming off surgery, season-ending surgery last year. He's their starter right now. The Yankees, all you need to know is A-Rod, who hasn't played in over a year and a half, is the best hitter for the Yankees in spring training so far, coming into opening day today. Hopefully A-Rod collapses, because as a fan, I can't stand him. But the Yankees are going to be in complete shambles. The Mets will be better and might end up with a better record than the Yankees for the first time in God knows how many years, because the Mets actually have pitching. I don't even know who plays for the Yankees right now, because, I mean, you have just these no names. It's going to be a long season for Yankees fans.
You know, I was going through the lineup, and Gonzaga, I got to let you go, but Ellsbury, the guy that was the Boston Red Sox, Brett Garner, he's terrific. Beltran, if he
healthy.
Yeah, if he's healthy. Yeah. Texera, Teixeira, he's a great guy. Also, I love CeCe Sabathia.
Well.
And I'll tell you this about CeCe Sabathia. He was better, heavier, bigger, fatter than he was skinny. I don't like, and he never had the same power. I hope he gets his power back. I really love the guy. He's a wonderful friend. Our kids went to school together. He's just
I just want them to win. So I'm all for it. And Geraldo, I love you, man. I'll do you proud tonight. All right,
stay out of trouble. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See ya.
All right. It's, so who do you have in basketball?
I didn't have either of these teams in the final, so.
Well, I had Arizona, but Arizona beat Wisconsin. I mean, Wisconsin beat Arizona, my Arizona. But Wisconsin is where Erica went to college, so the Badgers. I take the Badgers over the Blue Devils, although Duke, I think they should be more than a one-point favorite. But, I think when you get to this level, nothing is an accident. But you know what is also interesting is how many of these games were decided by a basket or two. And, a guy takes a three-pointer at the end of the game, hits the rim instead of going in. You know, a whole different story would be written. I mean, so many of the games, so it's fascinating, but so much of it is just luck of the draw, man. You never know. That's why to bet on it is crazy.
And I think the challenge more for Wisconsin to win tonight is to get past the high of beating Kentucky. You know what I mean? You have that post-game, we just beat the best team in basketball. Now you got to play Duke, but sometimes players don't wake up in time. I mean, it's only 24 hours between win.
So what do you think about this this flap over F that N?
I think people have a great argument when they say if it was turned around the other way and it was a white player saying something about an African-American, this would be a huge story today.
I think that's
correct.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
And I really bugs me, that political correctness, really. I hope that this will always be the place, this show, where we bust that on both sides. We'll bust it on the right, and we'll bust it on the left. It is absolutely what this person said is absolutely inappropriate, and that deserves, that's more than just bad sportsmanship. I mean, that's racism to me.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
24 minutes after 11 o'clock. Welcome back. Thank you for calling 866 Geraldo. Let me start on the Upper West Side. Hey, what's on your mind? Thanks for calling.
Geraldo, I had trouble keeping my mind focused on what I was talking about.
All right, well, focus in. Be sharp. What's on your mind?
I got to say a few things on this time, because it's a world problem, absolutely. And is there any reason why Netanyahu's concerns aren't credible? In other words, they're tangible. That's the thing right there. And if that's true, then we have to look at the tangibility of the negotiations going on. And they are, as a matter of trust, intangible. So therefore, this, you know, I love debate. My debate was whether you needed really the right glasses to drink properly when I was in college. So, you know, but here's the deal. You cannot.
Well, I like that. I like that topic, that college topic.
The world.
So anyway, come on, make the point. What is it?
I just made it. They're credible concerns.
They're credible concerns. Of course they're credible concerns for the whole world. We don't want nuclear proliferation.
I noticed that
just saying now, the Israeli minister in charge of strategic planning says the military option of Israel versus Iran is still on the table, to which I say, oy vey. I mean, that's the last thing we need. Yes, the fears are tangible. But so are the inspections tangible, dude. I mean, that's... Yes, Paul. What's up, Paul?
Yeah, even the inspectors...
I don't know what happened to Paul. Hello?
Commuting.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, you're talking about the commute with city and stuff?
Yes.
And the deliveries. Let me tell you, there's like thousands and thousands of trucking people who have to get this stuff to the customer. And if it wasn't for the fact that we have... This is politics now. We have Citibank sponsored by the government to make these bike lanes, took out 400, 500 truck stops. Meanwhile, you got the poor little guy who owns a bicycle shop in the city, pays rent, gas, heating, and doesn't get respect.
So you don't like Citibank?
But meanwhile, we can spend billions of dollars and millions of dollars to support a $1 billion bank that's losing money on it.
I don't know if Citibank makes any money. I don't know much about Citibank, Citibike, except that I like the idea of it. I ride my bike everywhere, particularly these 6 months from April through November, 7 months. I love that people are riding bikes, although, you know, some of the crazy drivers makes it a real peril. I see people riding, out of town is riding the city bikes without helmets, and I just worry that some cab's going to nudge them and some lady, you know, from someplace far away is going to be crushed. Generally speaking, I like bikes. I want more people to ride bikes. And I also think there should be congestion pricing on people bringing their cars into the area south of 57th Street.
Oh, you want that toll?
I do, yeah. I mean, why should you be able to squeeze your car in the lower Manhattan for free?
Yeah, but then it makes it only available to the wealthy who can afford to pay that toll every day.
But, you know... You can make that argument about every toll.
No, that's not true, because this is the toll that they're putting that they want to put below 59.
Congestion pricing, like London has, Miami has congestion pricing. Almost every big city other than this one. And the only reason this one doesn't have congestion pricing is because of the power of the outer boroughs, that most of the voters live in the four boroughs outside of Manhattan. But all these cars coming into Manhattan, maybe there should be free parking lots for people. Maybe that's the way to do it. Free vast parking lots in Queens. Would people then, you know, would you, well, you come in at 3 a.m. You're different. Here's Joe and Wayne. What's up, Joe?
Hey, I need your advice. I'm going to Israel. My mother was Jewish, so that makes me Jewish, even though I was raised by Italian father, Roman Catholic. But I wonder how safe it is. We're going to go all over.
Have you ever gone?
Pardon?
Have you ever been to Israel?
No, but I know they have the Iron Dome and...
You have absolutely nothing to fear. You have more worry about getting hit by a truck at a crosswalk in Manhattan than you do anything happening bad to you in Israel. The security there is superb. There's no intifada going on right now. People aren't blowing themselves up. It's been forever since you had a real legitimate terrorist action inside metropolitan Israel. So go enjoy. You know, sides of your heritage will be amply rewarded. You'll go downtown in Jerusalem. You'll see, where the resurrection took place. You'll see the Western Wall of the Old Temple. You'll see everything. It's a once in a lifetime, and it's absolutely safe. Whether or not, the politics is something that's palatable to you, believe me, there won't be an Iranian nuclear strike when you're there. Here's Dave in Long Island. What's up, Dave?
Hey, Geraldo, why can't we just build them a power plant, like, and take out all the elements that are bad? Say, look, you guys.
I think that's a great idea. I think that's a wonderful idea.
I mean, the French do it all the time. We go in there, say, look, we'll build your power plant.
I think that that's part of the deal, that the Russians get the highly enriched uranium that they've already
manufactured that goes to, I appreciate the call, Dave, that goes to Russia, and they're free to pursue their civilian nuclear power program. And you're right, the French sell reactors that are proven safe as nuclear power can be. They can buy them from the French, they can buy them from the Americans, they can buy them from a lot of different sources, not a lot, but they certainly can have legitimate nuclear power if that's what they want. I wish we could have nuclear power for the desalinization of the ocean waters. Look at California. That's the way to save California.
On the air, online, and on iHeart.com. We are 77 WABC. Live, local, on it. 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
37 minutes after 11 o'clock. Welcome back. On this first Monday in April, maybe rushing the season, but I was out on the water on Sunday getting my old boat home. So nice to be back on the water. Just kind of reaffirms it. And the winters get harder and harder to deal with. I mean, aside from the high taxes in New Jersey, that's the other reason people are leaving the state. They're leaving the state, some for work, but mostly for retirement to the sunnier climes. I may follow them. I'll take the show with me.
Really? You're thinking about it?
Who doesn't think about Florida? Well, Puerto Rico in my case. I'll get to your calls momentarily, folks. I just want to just kind of recap where we have been going today. The Rolling Stone magazine humiliation, that's the lead story in so many different media outlets today. The false University of Virginia gang rape story. And everyone's talking about how the magazine, chose not to interview eyewitnesses, chose not to question the purported victim's story, that they just surrendered when it came to their journalistic integrity, their journalistic responsibility. Rolling Stone in this University of Virginia gang rape story, they were guilty of rookie mistakes, really, and shame on them. But I really think that there's more to the story than it was just the editors and the reporters and the repeaters all dropping the ball journalistically. I think this is very much like Ferguson, Missouri, the hands up, don't shoot fraud. They wanted the shocking story to be true. That's why they didn't question it. You know, it's just like the Duke University lacrosse team. The people who were promoting that story just wanted it to be true. They wanted, in the University of Virginia gang rape story, Rolling Stones wanted the stereotype of their ideological enemies, the spoiled, the entitled, the white frat boys doing crude, criminal, savage things without fear of reprimand or punishment. Rolling Stone wanted that story to be true. That's why they didn't question that story. That's why they didn't question the story in the Duke University lacrosse team scandal, very similar to the University of Virginia story. Ferguson, hands up, don't shoot. You don't question the stories you want to be true. It is like the murders in Benghazi. And the fraud in Benghazi is that the United States could have saved our people in Libya, but we chose to do nothing. The ideologues wanted that to be true. They wanted Obama to be guilty of gross negligence because that suited their political, their ideological objective. That's why the promoters of the Benghazi story keep flogging it. Duke, University of Virginia, Ferguson, Benghazi, same phenomenon. Promoters posing as journalists. What's on your mind today? We'll start with our buddy Ralph. Long time no see, Ralph. What's up?
Well, Geraldo, those of us, I'm not one of them, but those on the far right, they've come not to trust the president whatsoever, and for probably good reason on many counts. And, they disagree with the way he dealt with Israel. But I'll tell you something, if you cut off negotiations with Iran, we're making a huge mistake. I think the president's on the right track. Maybe his naivete is
do you what fear turns wait, off. Do you fear that he's so eager for a legacy event that he will roll over to the Iranians?
Yeah, well, here it is. He wants to make his mark. You make a great point. But all in the same, when he trusts blindly, and he talks of those people as if they're free thinkers and they're going to come to the table and play nice with him, that's what turns a lot of us off. I think it has to be tough, real, steadfast negotiations.
Oh, of course. I agree, Ralph. What's Israel saying about, Iran these days? Now that the election is over, is Iran still the front page?
What, the front page in Israel?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're watching it probably more closely than anybody.
And so they really believe that it is an existential threat, that the Bibi's fears are well-founded?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. I think it splits the same way the political process splits here. Either you buy the president's explanation of what he's doing in Iran, that it's going to keep them safe, or you don't.
I think that what is happening, and I'm reminded of Abe Foxman, who was, the hardcore UJA Federation guy, a Holocaust survivor, and all the rest, Israel right or wrong. And he criticizing the letters written by the 47 Republicans. What is happening, I think, is a maturing of the Jewish electorate. I think that the American Jews are really becoming more thoughtful and more nuanced in their feelings. It's not going to be lockstep anymore. It's going to be like J Street's going to be bigger than ever. It's going to be a generational split. Money will always talk in politics. It's not just the Sheldon Adelsons. I mean, it's the Koch brothers or, a lot of Goyim money involved. Can you say that?
Sure, you just said.
But I think that, so I don't think the Jews have a particular monopoly on using money to influence the political process. But I think they're going to be busted more and more. And I think that the young folks are going to more and more make up their own minds. And I think that if you were to take a survey among young American Jews right now, I bet they back Obama more than they back Netanyahu. I'm guessing. I don't have mathematical proof in front of me. That's my vibe. That's my vibe just from people I know and people I talk to. And they're people who, many of them, Republicans. All right, in Brooklyn, Tony. What's up, Tony?
The only common thread here, Geraldo, is that you side.
Uh-oh. What do you say, Crash? Give me the translation. Nah, don't. Augustus in New Jersey. What's up, Augustus?
I'm having trouble with you saying that the boy's hand wasn't up because there's a YouTube video of the white contractors who's working out there. They've seen the whole thing. One of them was on the cell phone while it was happening. He said, "Oh, the cop's shooting at the kid, but the kid stopped." And he put his hands up like to surrender.
But do you trust Eric Holder? Do you trust the Attorney General of the United States? Augustus, answer the question. Do you trust the Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder?
Do
you trust him?
I trust no prosecutor.
So you don't trust him no matter what?
When it comes to a police officer shooting someone unarmed or whatever, they always get off because the prosecutor works with them.
Okay, Augustus, but you reveal your own personal prejudice. You don't trust any prosecutor. You don't trust any cop. Therefore, you can pick and choose the anecdote, however unreliable, that supports your point of view. You want promoters rather than reporters. You want repeaters rather than reporters. Hands up, don't shoot. Didn't happen. It didn't happen. The rape in the University of Virginia, probably, I don't know if she had a run-in, a violent run-in with somebody someplace, but certainly her story was made up of whole cloth. There was no party in the fraternity that night. People that saw her that night said she had no signs of any kind of physical battering that she claimed. She had her shoes on. It was, everything about that story was false. But the people believed it because they wanted to believe it. They want to believe. I can't stand fraternity boys. I wanted it to be true. I mean, you know what I mean. It satisfies my stereotype, my negative stereotype of frat boys. You know, what happened in Racino, what they call it?
Rancino. Yeah.
Rancino. The ethnicity of the rioters satisfies the different kind of stereotype. So you say, aha, they can't bring these people together and give them free drinks. When it satisfies your stereotype, you make it true. You make it true. And that's, you know, that's, I think, part of the choices we make. We had a caller earlier who said he stopped listening and he's just now back because he didn't, I became a part of the Obama apology machine. The reason that caller said that is what I was saying was something he disagreed with. So rather than listen, as I think the vast majority of you do, to opinions that you sometimes disagree with, sometimes vehemently disagree with, that you're smart, you're discerning, you understand that life is about give and take, that you're one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter and so forth. You understand that. If you want to listen just to someone that you always agree with, he's easy to find. Noam and I were talking about it. You know, you could tune in, you know, just listen to people who agree with you day in, day out, 24/7. In Whitestone, Bill's on the line. What's up, Whitestone?
Yeah, hi, Geraldo. How are you?
Good, man.
I just wanted to make a comment. That last caller that you had is the reason why it'll never get better in this country. Because, you know, it's the group of black people that aren't giving the white people the chance. They don't want to believe it just because the guy is white. I'm talking about the hands up, don't shoot. Okay?
Right, I understand what you're talking about, but yep. What about Israel? And, you know, what's the truth there? I mean, don't you think, Bill, that like that caller, Augustus in New Jersey, there are plenty of people who just refuse to see that Iran has any equity on its side whatsoever?
No, I understand that. And it's a belief whether they do or not. I'm talking about what happened here. It's factual. Okay, not who thinks what might
be. Oh, I agree.
Right.
I agree. It's factual. I agree, man. Thanks. Ted in Connecticut. What's up, Ted?
Hey, you know, Geraldo, thanks for having me. One question, all right, that I want to put out there is Harry Reid and his comments about Romney not having ever paid taxes. And
you're right. I'm so glad you brought that up. Harry Reid said he was not sorry for lying about Mitt Romney.
Yeah. You know what? And that's a serious problem. And that's
a serious problem. And I'll talk about it, Ted, right after this quick intermission.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
I had a plan, was a big baseball player back in high school. He could throw that speedball by you, make you look like a fool boy. Saw him the other night at this roadside bar. I was walking in, he was walking out. We went back inside, sat down, had a few drinks, but all we kept talking about was glory days. Well, it passed you by, glory days. And the work of
Bruce, glory days. Today, opening day. The Mets play, too. They play with
Nationals in Washington, 4 o'clock.
That's a beautiful park. The new, well, it's not so new anymore, the Nationals ballpark. And so is it going to be David Wright's season? The Mets are said to be improved. People are saying, guns among them, that the Mets might have a better year than the Yankees. I don't know when the last time that happened was. Crash probably does. Yankees play the Blue Jays today in the Bronx. I wish I was there, but Seoul has school. I promised I'd take her to a ball game, so I want to wait. Even though it's opening day, I'm going to miss it. I'm getting my hair cut anyway. My hair, you notice I'm...
Yeah, it's going a little wild.
Shabby. Shabby old crazy man with a long...
crazy man hair, yeah. Crazy old
crazy,
man hair.
Crazy man hair. Steve in Long Island, what's on your mind, Steve?
Hey, Geraldo, how you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for calling.
Listen, I just want to say very quickly...
Go ahead.
This whole deal with Iran is the biggest mistake that this country could ever, ever make. If we pass this agreement with Iran, what's going to happen is we are sentencing our children and their children to lives of darkness. What we should be doing is crippling sanctions on Iran as long as it takes until this administration is out of there and support the people of Iran. The Green Movement, we missed our opportunity when they were rising up.
Oh, Steve, I don't know if you've ever been there. I don't know, man. I don't know. I listen to these stories. That's your alternative, is to tighten sanctions.
Your alternative is to get tougher with Iran, as if we haven't been tough with Iran since they seized 400 of our people hostage in 1979. We've been tough with Iran ever since. What's it gotten us? That was 1979. They took hostages. And they've been our bitter enemy since, regardless of what has happened in terms of the reality of the Middle East. Regardless of the fact that in 2001, 15 of the 20 hijackers who slammed the airplanes into the World Trade Center were from Saudi Arabia. We're still the enemies of Iran. Saudi Arabia, our best friends, we hold their hands, we walk around the president schmooze with their kings and all the rest of it. That's Saudi Arabia. We're best friends with Saudi Arabia who attacked us. You know, these 15 hijackers. What did Iran do to us in recent decades? Oh, come on. We got to grow up. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you right here tomorrow.